You're blessed. Matthew 5. You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there's more of God and his rule. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are. No more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought. You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. In the best meal you'll ever eat. You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. Have you got a good appetite for God? What does that even mean, to have a good appetite for God? Well, I can tell you that part of what it means is to pay attention to the pressures of the day, to pay attention to the lack and think, is that part of a lack that I haven't stopped and built my appetite for God? Am I trying to do everything in my own strength? And of course, you know we do that. Of course we do that. We don't mean to do it necessarily, but of course we do. We do try and do things in our own strength, because we've discovered that God doesn't work at the right pace for us. He doesn't work with the right answers, you know. So often we're asking very specific things, God, and why don't you give me very specific answers? And then he reminds us that we are the people of God, and we are to move together, and we are to support one another, and we are to hold one another up in love, and we are supposed to exposit the gifts of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, gentleness, patience, goodness, mercy. Against such things there is no law. These are the things that every person, every human being on the planet responds to, and we are the ones that are charged with building those things up. And we are charged with those things, even though they are difficult things to carry, difficult things to mature in ourselves, and certainly difficult things to express. But when you hunger and thirst after righteousness, these things will be added to you, right? So this is why that scripture says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst. Blessed. You're blessed if you hunger and thirst. Do you have an appetite for the things of God? We all have appetites for distraction and appetites for destruction, right? Yes, that was a Guns N' Roses reference. Leave it alone. We all have appetites that can be distractions or can be blessings, right? And so part of the series that we're going through at the moment is reminding us that reality really does bite. That we tend to go towards the darkness and not the light. And so if your reality is biting hard right now and you've been going towards the darkness and not the light, maybe today's message is for you, to remind you that you are to build an appetite for God, because he will fill you. And it is the best meal, the best food, the best drink that you will ever have, because it's food for the soul, and it's water that quenches a thirst that cannot be quenched any other way. In Hebrews chapter 4, we get a bit of a sense, Hebrews chapter 3, I should say, we get a bit of a sense of what happened for Israel in the desert when they were hanging out with Moses. Now when you read Exodus 17, you read about people that are thirsty. It simply says there was no water where they were. They couldn't find a drop. And they came up against Moses and said, why'd you bring us out here to die? It's one of those moments. It's one of those complaint moments that Phil spoke to us about last week. And in many ways, it seems very, very reasonable that they would complain. And they complain against Moses. And sometimes when I read that scripture just by itself, it seems a little innocuous. Except if you look at Hebrews chapter 3 and it says, today, please listen. Don't turn a deaf ear as in the bitter uprising. the time of wilderness testing. Even though they watched me at work for 40 years, your ancestors refused to let me do it my way. Over and over they tried my patience, and I was provoked. Oh, so provoked. And I said, they'll never keep their minds on God. They refused to walk down my road. Exasperated, I vowed, they'll never get where they're going. They'll never be able to sit down and rest. I, for one, read that and find that a little distressing. That the people of God, and it's sort of like God's answer to God, I showed you over and over again that I was with you. I proved to you that if you hunger and thirst, if your appetite is the right appetite, an appetite for righteousness, I can fill that. But if it's an appetite for self-centeredness and selfishness and me only and blame the leader and not my, all of those kinds of things, then the obvious outcome is disappointment. And disappointment at its end game becomes bitterness. Bitterness, of course, leads to death. Slow death from the inside out. We don't want you to be like those in the bitter uprising in the wilderness. The bitter uprising in the wilderness in Exodus 17 reads like, people were thirsty. And so they came, and it says, directed by God. So this is verse 1 of chapter 17 of Exodus. Directed by God, the whole company of Israel moved on by stages from the wilderness of Sin. They set camp at Rephidim, and there wasn't a drop of water for the people to drink. There, right there where they could see, right? So the people took Moses to task, give us water to drink. Moses, you, a few million of us here, Moses, give us water to drink. Can you just sort that out for us? But Moses said, why pester me? And then this is the curious thing. He doesn't just say, why pester me? He says, why are you testing God? Why are you testing God? But the people were thirsty for water there. Fair enough, right? And they complained to Moses, why did you take us from Egypt and drag us out here with our children and our animals to die of thirst? They pile on. It's not just me, Moses. By the way, mate, I represent a group of people. I am coming to you with a complaint for the majority of the people. All of the people think this. All of the people think you're failing us. All of the people. Never heard that before? Moses, just fix it, because all the people, they're piling on. Basically, they're saying our children and our animals, it's all going to be your fault, mate. Moses cried out in prayer to God, what can I do with these people? Any minute now, they'll kill me. So, when you read Hebrews and you realize that this was a bitter uprising, it wasn't just people saying, hey Moses, hey mate, hey fella, we're a little thirsty here, bud. Could you go get some coldies for us? We're a little thirsty. They're genuinely angry. They are bitter, and they are ready to kill a guy because they can't find water. Some archaeologists suggest they weren't very far from water at all. In fact, there were springs very nearby. But when you're stuck, and when your blinders are on, and when you can't see for bitterness, you can't find blessing. Because bitterness blinds you, right? Bitterness blinds you to any blessing that's just like one step ahead of you. See, this is the beauty of community. If they'd asked a little further, I'm guaranteeing that a couple million people covers a fair few kilometers. And I'm guaranteeing that if they asked around and maybe started to say to people, let's look for water, let's go find the blessing, let's bless one another, that they may have been able to solve this for themselves. But instead, the bitterness had blinded them, even though they crossed the Red Sea, even though they'd been protected from an army that was ready to kill them, even though they had manna on the ground and quail in the air, even though God had promised them free food and lodging for the next 40 years in the desert, as long as it took. They hadn't learnt yet what it was to walk in complete trust. Now, when you say, they were in the desert, they were thirsty, they couldn't find water, it seems completely fair enough that they would complain. But the complaint came from a place of bitterness, and the bitterness had blinded them. Because that's what bitterness does. And that's why the writer of Hebrews says, do not, today, hear my voice. Do not be like those who were part of the bitter uprising in the wilderness. Why were they bitter? Because they could not trust God the way God had asked them to trust. And so they find themselves complaining to Moses and essentially saying just to one guy, you fix it. Now, sometimes we do look at the people like Moses and think they were kind of superheroes. Maybe they were more anointed. And there were certainly massive gifts on their life. But we know Moses had landed in this place of leadership, not through choosing it, not through applying for the job, but through God leading him through lots of desert places himself. What's in your hand, Moses? Just that's all you've got. I'm sure at times Moses would have preferred to have armor and a sword in his hand than a staff, but the staff was all he had. And God continued to use the thing in his hand. At this point, Moses' life is under threat and the people are bitter. And the people bringing the complaint are suggesting they are representing everybody. And that's often something that happens for us, isn't it? The complaint, I'm coming to you to tell you that you're wrong. And by the way, all these people think so too. Bitterness kind of likes to gather a gang. Moses, by this stage, he's worried. Obviously, his life is under threat. They're ready to top him. And so he goes to God and he cries out. And in verse 4 of chapter 17 of Exodus, it says, Moses cried out and prayed to God. In verse 5, it says, God said to Moses, go out ahead of the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel. Take the staff you used to strike the Nile. You know that staff, that one thing that was in your hand? Take that again and go. I'm going to be present before you there at the rock at Horeb. You are to strike the rock. Water will gush out of it and the people will drink. The complainants didn't get to see the miracle. It says Moses walked past them and walked beyond them. But the elders were with him. The faithful, the ones that had been called and had signed up for the gig, they went and they witnessed the miracle. And the people drank. And this would happen a couple of times in their journeying. But the thing that was in Moses' hand was not a shovel to dig for water. It wasn't a drill. It was just obedience. And obedience is counted under as righteousness. And righteousness is that which saves us. Hebrews 11. You know, obedience is counted as righteousness. Your obedience is well beyond your bitterness. Your obedience is where the blessing is. Your blindness is where the bitterness is. And so this group of people are complaining bitterly. Because they're blind. They can't even remember what was good. I did a 3-day intensive this week and I was away from the office and it was very, very difficult to be away from the office. We don't have all of our staff at the moment and so we're having to make, you know, having to sort of make bigger calls than we perhaps usually would, and I'm having to deal with some bigger issues than perhaps I normally would by myself. But I was in an intensive that was all about resilience and maturing leaders. So it was kind of an amazing moment to be sitting in this 3-day intensive, and we were all passing notes in class. We were all emailing our staff, and we were all running our churches from the classroom. And everybody in the classroom was a pastor and a leader in a church. And so it was kind of fun. But we were talking about making sure we had, you know, full enough tanks to do what we needed to do and to stick it out in ministry and all those kinds of things, and to keep our appetites up for the things of God. We were talking about what it is that knocks people out of the race. And of course, this week in Australia, and it's one that's affected the world, obviously, a senior leader has had to step aside because of indiscretions in his job in the church. And when I heard that this week, my heart broke. It really broke. It's sad. And there's healing and there's restoration, but we've just got to live in the moment that we're in and understand that even in this, God has a plan. And we sat there with the lecturer, who's a senior leader in our nation and is doing his doctorate in professional supervision. So he's no slouch. And he had a phone call that morning from his church. And his church said, we're going to need you to help. We've got hundreds of staff that are going to need your help. And I stopped and said to the guys and girls in the room, remember where we were on the day that we heard the news of a senior leader being taken out of the race, at least for a while. and we were standing in front of a man who had been called for such a time as this. These moments, I think we need to stop and recognize that even in these painful moments, God is there. It was just kind of a heavy moment, but there was some sweetness in the bitterness that we could feel, and in the brokenness that we were learning about. And I say that to say this, that the only way, and again, the lecturers were you know, holding PhDs, and these were clever people, smart people. And so I said, well, what is it? Does everybody? Is it just inevitable? Are we all just going to break and fall over one day and just hope that God fixes it with some other person coming along? I said, you know, and the question was really sort of obvious. Like, what's the answer? What's the big bit of wisdom from heaven that you could give us? And the lecturer stopped and he said, do you know what all of the material, not just the Christian-based material, all of the mainstream material says when it comes to resilience? It's really simple. It says, be grateful. Be more grateful. That's it. And isn't that a little bit too simple? Start with gratefulness. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst, for they will be filled. The best meal you've ever had. What's your thirst that you're bringing today? Do you even recognize what your thirst is? Because there's distraction and there's discipleship, right? Distraction takes you to all your negative habits, all the things that get in the way, the sinful stuff, right? Some of it's simple, some of it's really bad. Some of it's simple, some of it's really sinful. There's distraction and then there's discipleship. Discipleship says, I will go to God. The complainants in Exodus 17 went to Moses, and Moses went, I got nothing for you, I'm going to God. My life's under threat, I'm going to God. God says, take what's in your hand and just do something faithful with it. And he did. And it's recorded there for us to see that water flowed from a rock in a spring in the desert, and it changed the trajectory of Moses' leadership, and it also changed the trajectory of the complainants, because we know most of them never saw the other side of that journey. But gratefulness is the game changer. Gratefulness is the game changer. Always has been, always will be. So I ask you, what are you grateful for today? I'm stuck in my basement. I want to be with you, but I'm grateful that at least I have this. I'm grateful that I can set up a camera and I can speak to you and I can still feel the beauty of sharing God's word this way. What are you grateful for? I'm going to choose to be grateful for the isolation that we have to do with our family, because I believe that there's a reason that we have to stop. There's always a reason for that. But here's what happens when you're thirsty. You lose concentration, you lose focus, and you lose memory. You lose concentration, you lose focus, and you lose memory. Did you know that your short-term memory is affected by thirst? Dehydration affects your short-term memory. So here's what I put to you. In Exodus 17, the complainants come to Moses. This is like literally several days after the miracle of manna and quail. I would suggest to you that their thirst had affected their short-term memory, that God was a God who was a God of the breakthrough, a God of miracles, a God of blessing. And the distraction had pulled them towards the bitterness and the blindness, and it hadn't led them to the discipleship that those lessons should have led them to. Thirst forgets blessing. Complaining forgets contentment. And rebellion forgets revival. They had been revived. They had been released. They'd been set free. But reality was biting. And they were like, now, but I'm just thirsty. And the thirst had already allowed them to forget the blessing. Their short-term memory had been affected because they were thirsty and they went to the distraction rather than the discipleship. The bitterness had blinded them and they hadn't gone towards what they knew of the God that was showing them who he was. As the writer of Hebrews 3, wasn't it, suggested, you know, don't today when you hear my voice, don't be like those in the bitter uprising. Come and sit and learn from the word of God. Thirst forgets blessing. Complaining forgets contentment. There was contentment for a day. There was celebration. They had manna. They had quail. But the complaining kicked in and the contentment went out the door. And rebellion forgets revival. It just forgets it. So here's what I want to bring to you today. In Exodus 17, reality has bitten and they are thirsty and they have been blinded by bitterness. So much so, this is not just a simple complaint about water, remember. They had actually decided that it would be okay to kill Moses because he hadn't given them water. And there was a whole group of us that we represent. There's a whole group of us that are against you. And Moses goes, okay, wait here. You guys don't even get to witness this miracle. Elders, come with me. And God says, take what's in your hand. Your obedience will be counted as righteousness. And we see the miracle and we see the thirst quenched. They'd forgotten that they'd been revived multiple times. Rebellion had made them forget that they'd been revived. So here's just a couple of thoughts about what the cure might be. Remember, just remember. Remember what? Remember the good stuff. Be grateful. Get that grateful thing turned up in your heart. Remember, you have been led, you have been fed, and you have been seen through seasons many times before. Remember that. Rest. Here's a good one. Before you complain, wait for it. This is deep. Take a nap. Ask any psychologist, take a nap. Seriously, let your body sleep for a while, because complaint and bitterness often comes from a place of lack of rest. Take a nap. I'm okay with that. Relax. Just relax. God's got it. Now, that's not being lazy. It really isn't. And it's not saying, oh yeah, God's in control, and I'll just wait for him to do it all for me. No, he says, seek me and you will find me. There's a seeking, there's a doing part for you. Remember, though, that you have been led and you have been fed and he's taken you through these seasons before. Rest. Before you complain, take a nap and relax, knowing that God is in control. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst. The people in Exodus 17 didn't even understand that they were blessed to thirst, because the thirst made them seek, but they sought the wrong direction. The bitterness had blinded them, and so they couldn't see that God was actually trying to grow them up. Because when there's lack, there's always an answer. It may not come in the moment you wanted, and it may not come in the package you wanted, but we've said this over and over in this series, in this Reality Bites series, that our own ability to solve our own problems, we should just stop doing that. We should stop doing that. We should rest in his presence. We should remember that he has led us and fed us many times before. And then we should relax, knowing that God is in control. And that's why this week of heaviness that I've had, and potentially you have too, this week where we've heard sad news about a major church in our nation, where we've seen a war continue on unabated, where we've seen all sorts of things that have affected us, and not just that meta-narrative, but the local narrative, the things that happened in your house, in your life. You know, you might have, you know, knocked your car into the other parent's car at the car park. You might have run out of money when you went to pay for that thing at the shops. There's all sorts of very natural and very normal things that happen to us that can stress us out and bring anxiety on. But we are told to fix our eyes on Jesus, to fix our eyes on things above. And it is a hard thing to describe when you're saying, Pastor Justin, but the natural things are overwhelming. If there's a debt that has money, then I have to pray for money. Sometimes it's trying to step into that place of going, I will trust God even in the lack. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst, for theirs is the kingdom. This is a blessed season. I don't want to be in my basement. I want to be with you, but this is where we are. And so I'm going to take it as a blessing. But what I want to do right now is to give you a moment to rest. Is to give you a moment to stop and reflect. Is to give you a moment to remember the good things that God has done. To rest. And like a prayerful rest. You don't get to fall asleep right now, but you get to stop and rest and relax. and ask God to bring you peace in this season. And we're just going to spend a bit of time in quiet reflection, remembering that we don't want to be like those in the bitter uprising in the wilderness. We want to be like Moses, who was able to step aside from that, go and seek God and see refreshing come. I urge you, reality is going to continue to bite, but God is going to continue to bless. There is distraction and there is discipleship. Bitterness will blind you, but there's blessing on the other side if you'll just turn your eyes upon Jesus. Take some time to breathe in and breathe out and know that God is with you even today, in this very moment. He's with you in this season. God bless you as you seek him this week.